Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Jeremy Schapp about a documentary airing tonight on ESPN about Michael Camerata and his connection to the Little League World Series and to 9/11. And we will talk to Jeff Passan about some newly discovered footage of Ted Williams talking about hitting with his Hall of Fame teammate, Bobby Doerr. But first, commerce.
My name is Jessa. One of the things I love the most about working for United Healthcare is that everybody matters. Every moment matters. There's a person behind every problem. I care because it's what I was put on this earth to do.
I'm Ben, and I work at United Healthcare. I am just one piece of a larger puzzle, but every piece matters. It's more than just work. We want to make the healthcare system better for everyone. I care because I want to make a difference. That's what committed to care means to me.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Michael, you were with me, right? We went to see a Penn game at the Palestra. The Palestra is just the greatest place on earth. You know, it's a museum
for basketball.
Essentially. Yeah, yeah. It's just so great. Big Five and Ivy League and stuff like that. And I'm sitting next to a woman and she's talking about the game with a certain amount of knowledge. You know, and I go, oh, do you come here often? She goes, I'm the president of the school. Amy Gutman, right? That was her name, yeah. Amy Gutman. Yeah, I mean, how stupid. I mean, you could have scraped me off the floor. I'm just like, what?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All right, I'm going to be brief about the Nats. They started an hour late for me because they're at Texas.
Oh, right.
And they had this kid, Jackson Kent, on the mound who actually looks younger than the baby pitching coach. The pitching coach looks like he's in high school. Looks like he's a surfer in high school.
He's got
and
great
Jackson
hair.
Kent, yeah, Jackson Kent looks actually younger than him. And he's on the mound, and he's given up runs in each of the first three innings. And the Nats are down 3-0 or 4-0, whatever they're down. And I know it's over. I mean, I know it's over early.
5-3.
Yeah, just no good. They end up losing 5-0, apparently late in the game. The baby manager goes lefty-righty. He went lefty-righty all game with Vivas, didn't do him any good. He put in Tana as a pinch hitter, and of course he struck out because he doesn't belong in the major leagues. Yeah. You know, and this orthodoxy of going righty-lefty all the time, it's not paying off. And then Dylan Cruz, you know,
he
swings. Did he get a hit? Because when I watched him, he didn't. He swings at the first pitch all the time. I mean, if I know it, the other team knows it. Anyway, the Nats, here's all I want to say about the Nats at the moment. They used to be a poor home team, but a good road team. They are now becoming a bad road team. Mm-hmm. Okay, they had 0-4 in Atlanta. They had 1-3 in Philadelphia. They had 0-3 with the Mets. They're 0-1 here. If you go back, and I'm doing this without any knowledge. This is seat of the pants here. That's all it is. You go back to the Curtis Meade trade. You tell me what their record is. What is the record following the Curtis Meade trade? Because I don't think it's any good. And I'm not saying Curtis Meade is the linchpin, but in a very short amount of time, they traded two everyday players, right? Two everyday players, Luis Garcia, Curtis Meade, and an all-star pitcher. And they've seemed to be falling apart or have fallen apart.
Yeah, this is why you play 162. I believe it's 6-15 or 6-16 at this point. I only know this because I actually looked up that number about 2 days ago for you.
Oh, yeah. They're just, you know, it's not good. It's not good. It's almost as if psychologically that was a blow to this team. And they are not the competitive team that they were before. Abrams did not play in the field last night, right? He was DH. Had two hits. I mean, the first two at-bats, I saw him get hits. But didn't play in the field. Maybe the next time he plays in the field, he's at second base. So
I just looked this up. They were 53-52 when they made the trade. And now they are 60-67. So what is that? Yeah, 7-15. Is that what you said?
Not
Michael?
Very good.
Yeah.
Not very good.
Certainly some worse.
Yeah, but not very good. All right, so I'm done with that.
Did you see what happened to the Mariners last night?
No, what happened?
Oh,
they lost 22-0. Most lopsided shutout since 1887.
Wow. Wow. So I guess Cal Raleigh didn't have a big night.
Yeah. That's
what was the score?
22-0.
To who?
To was it the Brewers?
This was Brewers. And I think most of the runs for the Brewers came late.
Wow. 22-0?
Yeah, that's we need to have a meeting.
Yeah,
that's kind of score.
Right? So yesterday I couldn't play golf. I couldn't play golf because there was the women's member guest. It's fine, you know. I would the course was locked down except for that. And I will say this: I went over there. The women in the member guest yesterday. It was the theme of the 250th anniversary of the United States of America. They don't really have these things in men's member guests. They don't have themes because of what I'm going to get to now. The women all dressed up patriotically, and they all had matching outfits, and it was fantastic, and they were having the greatest time. You know, they took it for what it was. It's a made-up event, and let's go have some fun. Yeah. And if you did that with men would, right, Michael? They would never.
You'll often see, you know, you'll see partners, so guys who are playing together in an event who have a theme for their own group, but it doesn't ever
seem to be
turning
wide. And people make fun of them. People make fun of them when they see them and shame them into not dressing like that the next day. And, yeah, and you don't see it tournament-wide, so it was fabulous. Anyway, so I went to the putting green.
Anyone wearing a Nats something. Hawaiian shirt and short set?
Me. Only me wearing a Nats Hawaiian shirt to dinner. Only me. So it's beginning to fall apart. There are strings already.
No.
It's a second wearing and strings already. Anyway, so I go to change putters. I take the three putters that I've been using, which is a blade, a mallet, and a spider putter. I take them out to the putting green to try each one out. And I fairly quickly decide that actually the mallet suits my eye better than the others, and I going forward I should probably try that. I put my left hand low. I keep, now Michael, I didn't consult you about this, and maybe
no,
I did it
talked
wrong
about it.
I keep my interlocking grip. My right hand is on top. I keep my interlocking grip, and I'm now trying to lead the ball with my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a little awkward at first. I don't have at first the same power that I want to have. I don't
more
get through the
piston
putt.
Stroke. It might feel like.
Well, it didn't feel great, but the results weren't terrible. I mean, I was at least close to the hole on longer putts. I felt I got distance better as long as I used the same hole all the time. I mean, after a while, even
just
even Reginald would get close. But I also made a few five-footers, a few, three out of 50 or something like that. But I made a few, and then I would miss most, and I'd miss agonizingly close. But do you think that's going to help?
Yeah, I think this is a great way to practice, even if you go back to your normal grip when you're playing. I think the big thing for you is that left hand low is also going to square up your shoulders, which is going to help you get into a more consistent position when you're over the ball.
I got a note this morning from DG, who said, you're probably peeking at the ball. You're probably trying to follow it at the moment that you hit it, which is a bad thing. You should keep your head down. Am I correct on that?
You have a lot of upper body following. It's not even just that you're peeking at the ball. Your body's physically moving when you're striking the ball.
It shouldn't. It just should be in the shoulders. And I don't. Well, never taking lessons is part of it.
Well, sure. You know?
And also being out of a certain age where people say, oh, yeah, that's good.
I wish we could get the perspective of some of the players making the turn and just see you grinding out there with three different putters talking to yourself on the green.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Anyway, Ricky told me I should draw a line. You know,
we got
chalk
the chalk line going?
The chalk line. He said he used to make 50 putts in a row. He didn't leave till he made 50.
That's just showing off.
He did it pretty easily. And well, he tried to get on the tour.
So Phil used to do a clock drill going around the hole for 100 putts from 3 feet.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So
I mean, this is the kind of thing like practicing free throws, right?
It hurt my back after a while. It hurt my back.
Well, and you also stooped over, yeah.
You have to watch your feet and what they're doing to the green. If you put a towel down, it causes less damage to the green as well.
I should do that then. I should do that. Anyway, so that's my story. I'm sticking with it. Got a lovely note from Carlos Araya. I'm going to read some of it. I've been a little for as long as I can remember. I wanted to send you a note this week for a couple of reasons. And he says the podcast has gotten him through some difficult times, and we appreciate that. He said, I especially enjoy living a little vicariously through you and Michael and your father-son golf journey. So he talked about that. And he said, I grew up professionally with Greg Finnegar. So hearing you talk about playing Grove 23 with him made me smile. My immediate next thought was, wait, isn't Greg retired yet? How old is he? I believe, Michael, that he was going to retire this past winter, right?
Yeah, I think late winter, early spring.
And here's the part that is most interesting to me from Carlos Araya. I serve as the general manager and CEO of Bellevue Country Club. And this week we host the BMW Championship. I'm a retired agronomist who somehow ended in the GM CEO chair, and it's pretty special to see our club on this stage. Thanks again for all the laughs, inspiration, company over the years, and please listen to Michael on those bunker shots and how to address them. I hope you get a chance to watch our great club on TV this week. Who knows, maybe a golf trip one day. And one last thing that makes me laugh. I grew up a Cubs fan, love Wilbon. However, somehow Wilbon becomes more and more curmudgeonly with every passing year. Knowing he'll be watching St. Louis shine this week, I'm already looking forward to hearing his feedback on Monday. And I expect absolutely nothing positive about our great city. Sorry, we are the Midwest, yet go Cubs. So it's a lovely note. It is a lovely note. And yes, the flyover, as Wilbon disparagingly refers to it. Memphis, St. Louis, Chicago hosting the President's Cup. And then what did he go off on a tangent? Chicago must host an event every single
every
year.
Every summer.
Yes.
You every know, summer. Nothing hosts an event every year, you know, unless you're
maybe
on the
maybe we could get a late
rotation.
Summer event in Indiana.
Yeah, yeah, in Indiana, across the, well, it's not even a river, just across the street, right. I guess. No,
if,
I mean,
if you remember the 2018
Southampton doesn't host every year.
Well, they
say
can't.
This again.
No, I was saying the 2018 Bellevue PGA turned out to be a really exciting one. Brooks won, but if you remember, Tiger was in the mix.
I just, you know, I mean, what is...
By the way, I keep seeing stuff on Liv. Are they done?
Well...
Is it in its final death
gasping.
Throes?
They're gasping.
I just love the fact that they were done, but didn't tell anybody to try and still sell some tickets. Keep no, the players there, just, because I think that was a condition of getting the Liv 2.0 money.
The thing people need to understand is Liv was created overnight by
the
two
damage
guys.
The damage has been done.
Yes. You know, that's what happened. And so those two guys, you only need one of them to say, I'm done. And the other one says, okay, I'm done too. And that's the way it is. We have a show today. We have an odd show today in which we're going to be talking about two things that you can actually see. One is a podcast by Jeff Passan, which features Ted Williams talking about hitting with Bobby Doerr, the great second baseman from the Boston Red Sox. And one is a special about Little League Baseball and having to do with the retirement of a number, and we're going to talk to Jeremy Schapp about that. So that is today's show, and it follows herewith. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is brought to you by FanDuel. Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Certain flavors instantly transport you back in time, like those classic refreshing freezer pops everyone lived on as kids. That's why you want to try the new Firework Freeze 5-Hour Energy Shot. It will completely blow you away. They have officially taken a beloved freezer pop classic and reimagined it into a delicious, convenient energy shot. It's a serious flavor explosion from the very first sip, perfectly blending juicy cherry, citrusy lime, and that sweet, candy-like blue raspberry. Honestly, it tastes exactly like the real thing, but with a major upgrade. You get that iconic freezer pop flavor you crave with absolutely none of the sugar. It's the ultimate zero-sugar portable summer companion that sparks a tasty flavor sensation and keeps you moving, whether you're headed to the beach, working late, or traveling. You need to stock up on this flavor immediately. Ignite your taste buds with a Firework Freeze-flavored 5-Hour Energy Shot. Now available online at 5hourenergy.com or find it on Amazon.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I'm so tired all the time.
This is Alexa Lash. She can sing better, though, yes. This is Alexa Lash and the Old Fashions. This is called So Tired All the Time. She said, I hope you've all been well. My younger brother actually just moved to D.C. for grad school, so I thought of you guys. Wanted to reach out with more music as I release it. Here's two of my latest with my band Alexa and the Old Fashions. Our full band album is coming out at the end of the year. And I have an album about grief coming out, well, whenever it's done. Thank you for continuing to support original art. So greatly appreciated. Thank you to all your listeners out there, including my Aunt Karen and Dave. Isn't that nice?
That's lovely. And boy, can she sing.
Yeah, she can. She's playing in Jeremy Schapp. And as I said in the open of the show, we're going to talk about two things that people who listen to us can actually watch. Can't watch us. Because we're not on video. There's no video component of this because that's awful. all those podcasts, video, awful. Yeah. You know, but this, good. You can just walk around with it. Yeah. And you can imagine how hideous we look. Anyway, Jeremy, you're involved in a documentary. Could you explain what it is about Little League and the retirement of a number?
Yeah, so it's a story about Michael Camerota. And Michael Camerota was one of the kids who represented Staten Island when Staten Island went all the way to the U.S. Championship game, the Little League World Series in 1991. And they lost to a team from California that day. But, of course, it was one of these magical runs for these kids. And they came home to Staten Island, and they were big stars, and they did a lot of appearances. And it was kind of a defining experience, as you would expect, in the lives of a lot of these kids. And Camerota was... he was a great athlete. He ended up going to Wagner College in Staten Island. He was the star of the hockey team there. And then after college, he went into the fire department. And of course, Staten Island is the borough, as you know, Tony, that sends the most people into the civil services in New York. His father was a civil servant. His brother became first a New York City police officer and then subsequently a member of the FDNY. And he had just graduated from the academy. He was what they call a probie, a probationary firefighter, on the morning of 9/11, 25 years ago. And he became the youngest firefighter to die on 9/11. In the years following that, of course, there were a lot of memorials built honoring Michael Camerota. And one of the places where he has been honored is in Williamsport. And he's in their Hall of Fame, Hall of Excellence, along with a lot of very famous names from sports and entertainment. But he's number 11. He wore number 11 for the Staten Island team. He's retired. And it's the only retired number at the Little League World Series. So if you show up there, if you're one of the kids who shows up in Williamsport over the summer and you're wearing number 11, you have to trade it in for a different number during the World Series. And
okay, that answers one of my questions. One of my questions was, if you were in Little League in New Mexico and you didn't know about this, could you wear 11, or has Little League sent out a letter to every single team, which they have the power to do, saying, no, 11 is off limits, in the way that 42 is off limits in the major leagues because of Jackie Robinson? They haven't done that.
No,
right?
No, it's at the World Series. It's at the World Series, when the World Series is taking place, that nobody else wears 11. And
I never heard of this. I never heard of this.
And
this is fascinating.
Neither had I. And the story was brought to our attention by one of our producers, Gus Fisterer. We were thinking about, with the anniversary coming up, the 25th, what kind of a story we were going to do to pay tribute to those who died, who were killed, murdered on 9/11. And this story, when you just lay it out like that, I mean, just the bare minimum of it, people react that way. Like, I never heard about this. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
And then when you dig deeper into Michael's life, and I won't, give it all away, you come away with a picture, of a young person who, made the ultimate sacrifice and did so, with his eyes open, understanding the dangers of the job, what was at stake, the risks, we think about now, right, in a different way than we did on September 10th, 2001, even though they were always there. And it's a story about, not only his life and the tragic circumstances of his death, but the aftermath for the people who were left behind, his family.
And this is on tonight, yes?
That's correct, 9 o'clock.
Okay.
Yeah, on ESPN.
Okay. So whose idea was this. How did they get to where Little League said, we are retiring this number at the World Series? How many years was the gestation process for that, or did it happen very quickly?
It happened quickly. It happened within a couple of years of 9/11. I think the actual ceremony, as I recall now, Tony, might have been in 05 or 06, but there were different ways they were considering honoring Michael Camerota. You know, as you guys remember, right after 9/11, you know, there were so many honorable efforts made to write capsule biographies of those who were killed. You know, the Times ran that series. I'm sure the Post did something similar. And so, you know, people knew the names, at least they did 25 years ago, of many of the of those who were lost. And Michael Camerota's story stood out from the beginning because he was the youngest, because he was FDNY, because his brother was New York City police officer. And the story is about, you know, as I said, it's about his death. It's about the aftermath. And it's also about, you know, the ways in which the biggest things that happen, life and death things, you know, they can feel so random. You know, his brother, Joe, who's a big part of this story and who wrote a book about coping with his brother's death, essentially, his younger brother's death. He was at the time a Staten Island police officer, and he's on the Staten Island ferry coming over to Lower Manhattan across New York Harbor at 9:59. I think it's 9:59 a.m. when the South Tower collapses. And at that point, when the ferry captain sees the tower go down, this is the first of the towers to go down, you know, he stops the ferry. He says, I can't go on. We don't know. Excuse me. We don't know what the situation is going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the tip of Manhattan. And so I think they stop for about 20 minutes. And so when Joe gets to the tip of Manhattan, you know, they rush up, you know, West Street, the West Side Highway, to get up there to the site of the World Trade Center. The North Tower collapses before they get there. If the boat isn't stopped, right, you know, then they're there when it goes down.
Yeah.
And they're gone too. And there were so many little moments like that, right, for thousands of people that morning in New York, in D.C. Of course, the plane that went down as well, that was taken down by those who fought back on that plane. And it's one of those things, too. And Michael died at the Marriott between the World Trade Centers. World Trade Center 3 was the Marriott. And his unit, Ladder Company 11 from the Lower East Side, they got there. And, you know, when he was there, the debris, part of the fuselage, I think, I might be misspeaking, collapsed onto the Marriott and kind of sheaved off half of the building. And there were firefighters on the other half who survived. And Michael was among those who did not.
And this is, what time is this tonight? What time
9
can you watch? Okay, good. That's good. That's good. I had no knowledge of this whatsoever. I mean, everybody has their own moments. Everybody knows where they were at that moment. We were doing a radio show at that moment, and the police came in, and this was in the ESPN Sports Zone on 11th Street, I think, in Washington, on the most beautiful day, you know, cloudless, beautiful day. And police came in and said, you're going to have to stop now. And I said, well, we're just sort of starting. What's the matter? He said, you're going to have to stop now and get out. And that was it. I mean, get out. Because obviously the White House was a target. Obviously the Capitol building was, all these things were targets. And you just went out into the street. What I remember in the aftermath of that, though, I remember George W. Bush throwing out the first pitch. I remember that. I remember that being such a hopeful moment and thinking, he owned a baseball team. He's a baseball player. Good. He's the right guy to do this. Do you remember that? Remember watching that?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And you know, I was in the city that morning in my apartment. And then I remember the thing, you know, the things that stand out now. I mean, it's a quarter century, Tony. It's crazy, right? And I was sent that evening to talk to baseball. Was it the White Sox or the Indians? It's hard to remember now. I think it was the White Sox who were in town. And we had reports that a number of them had been downtown when the attacks took place, and which were true. And I went to meet the team at the Grand Hyatt above Grand Central. And all the guys were hanging out at that mezzanine level, you know, where that barn TV is. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it was at that moment I was interviewing a bunch of the players that George Bush appeared on the TV. Remember, all day, you know, he had been, you know, flying around. They had been trying to figure out a secure place for him to be, to address the nation. And it popped up. And it's so weird, right? Like, because, you know, this is real life and it couldn't be more serious. But I keep thinking of it now as like a Jerry Bruckheimer movie, you know, like, you know, there's the president on TV and the whole, you know, you never hear people cheering in New York, right? People were cheering. It was crazy. It was surreal. And then over the course of the next several weeks, you know, in New York, covering all of the, you know, the ways in which sports were affected, you know, to the extent that that mattered at all, that was kind of my assignment. And there were just, it was, you know, we'll never forget that stuff. Right.
Good. Well, I hope that people watch this tonight. I assume that Michael Camerato's family is a major part of it. And I assume that,
yes,
you know, because it is the Little League World Series now, that Little League Baseball is a major part of it. And I will resist talking to you about competitive eating and Jeopardy. I will resist. Some other time, I will not resist. But this time, I will resist. I will. Thank you, Jeremy.
That's remarkable discipline on your part, Tony.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm not known for that. I'm not. Jeremy Schapp, boys and girls, we will come back with Jeff Passan. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Okay, kids, you know how it goes with these puck-shaped robots that people buy to clean their floors. There's a shiny new thing in a box. Everybody's very excited. There's a little booklet nobody reads. 6 months later, it's forgotten, stuck somewhere in your home. And then it's in the closet with all the other ones you bought before. I have a closet that is essentially a graveyard for enthusiasm. Apparently, it's different with Matic. They call it the first intuitive floor cleaning robot, which is the kind of phrase I would normally make fun of for 11 minutes, except here it just means the thing has eyes and a brain, kind of like these self-driving cars, so it doesn't just bump into things. It's designed and assembled in California. 10,000 homes regularly use these. It's cleaned over 400 million square feet inside homes, which is long enough to go to the moon and back. Matic sees your home the way you do, so it cleans the way you would, moving gracefully through real lived-in spaces without getting stuck. Its visual intelligence lets you simply point at a mess and say, Matic, clean this. And it understands you in over 75 languages. So anyone can use it just by talking to it. Even kids and grandparents like me. No app to figure out, no learning curve to go on. It just works. To get your Matic, go to maticrobots.com. Right now, go to Matic, M-A-T-I-C, robots.com/Tony. To get a year of free HEPA bags with your purchase today, a $96 value at no cost to you. That's maticrobots.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The other night I was browsing the Vistaprint website. Normally I wait till there's about two outs, two strikes in the Nats game, just to be sure. Just thinking about little ways to make our podcast feel even more organized and professional, I completely lost track of time. Because there's so many options. We use Vistaprint to order our show's custom notepads. We really do. And what's great is that I have orders from 8, 9 years ago that are still saved. So it's as easy as going and logging into my account. And they're ready to send out again. So I know Nigel uses some of the notepads,
yes,
the spiral notepads, which is great. And I use some of the notepads that have our logo sort of in a shadow in the background. We actually send those out every year, handwritten notes to our winners from the March Madness tournament bracket.
That's lovely.
I realized how useful it would be to have show-branded notepads for episode prep, just like Nigel, interview questions. Tony just uses a legal pad, but we're working to get him into our own show-branded one.
production notes and all those ideas that pop into your head right before you hit record. Instead of scribbling notes on random pieces of paper, everything stays in one place and it looks great too. And you know what? They have recommendations. So once you're part of their system and your logo's in there, they will say, hey, would you like a deck of cards? And you know what? You're sitting there considering.
Michael just passed the reed to me. This is like a relay in the Olympics.
Yeah, don't drop the
baton.
It's
like the 2x300, if there was such a thing. That's what we love about Vistaprint. They make it easy to turn simple ideas into polished professional products without spending a fortune. Whether you're running a podcast, a small business, or you just want materials that reflect your brand, Vistaprint gives you the tools and real human support to help make it happen. Vistaprint, print your possible. Right now, new customers can get 20% off with the code NEW20 at Vistaprint.com. Remember, that's 20% off at Vistaprint.com when you use the code NEW20. So use the code, people.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
I just want to love you from a distance.
Once again, this is Alexa Lash and the Old Fashions. This is a song called Love You From a Distance. She's real good.
Yes, she's real good.
Yeah. Michael, if people like Alexa Lash want to send in their original music to be played on this podcast, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Wonderful. Plays in Jeff Passan. In the way that we had Jeremy Schapp on to talk about something you could see tonight, you can see this thing we're going to talk about with Jeff Passan. It's his podcast, Sources Tell Jeff Passan. And it has to do with the late, great Ted Williams. Can you explain exactly what this is and how you came into possession of it? Because I am quite certain you never heard of this thing before somebody told you about it.
That is true, Tony. So on October 9th, 1987, on the banks of the Rogue River, which snakes through Oregon for about 215 miles, a few canoes pulled up onto a riverbank for a long-in-the-making baseball debate. Bobby Doerr is a Hall of Fame second baseman with the Boston Red Sox and was one of Ted Williams' closest friends. They loved fishing together, and Bobby Doerr was 5'11", 175, hit about 200 home runs in his career, and Ted Williams, Tony, was Ted Williams and believed that he knew just about everything there was to know about hitting because he kind of did. And so these two, for five decades, have been arguing about how to properly hit a baseball but have never had any sort of formal back and forth about it. And they decided during the middle of a three-day fishing trip on that riverbank that they are going to go back and forth and argue about hitting. And it's such a fascinating window into Ted Williams's world, and it shows him at 69 years old, still as full of vim and vigor as he ever was. And how I came into possession of this, there is a hitting coach in Mississippi named Josh DeMoney, and I met him this year. He's Connor Griffin's hitting coach, and he sends me a text one day, and it says, have you ever seen this before? And it was a link to this video, which is old camcorder footage of this debate from almost 40 years ago, Tony. And when I opened that thing up and saw Ted Williams there, I started frantically looking around on the internet anywhere I could to see if this had been out there, because for baseball fans, Tony, long lost footage of Ted Williams, Joey Votto, he put it well, this is like the holy grail of getting to see the greatest hitter that ever lived in what could be his final words about the craft of hitting.
So it had been in some small circulation, obviously, or somebody wouldn't have told you about it. It is clear from watching it that they know it's being filmed, that they're okay with it being filmed. A, who filmed it, and B, you know, how many people knew about it other than the four or five people that were on the fishing trip, or maybe eight or 10 people on the fishing trip, right?
Yeah, honestly, Tony, I don't know who filmed it. There's a lot about this video. The people in the background that we don't know. We know that Speck Shea, the old Yankees pitcher, was there. But beyond that, there's not a whole lot about this video because a lot of the people who were involved in it are no longer with us.
Right, right.
And this had been written about. David Halberstam in The Teammates wrote about it. And the doctor named John Feldenezer, who was a fly fisherman, wrote about this in the American Fly Fisher, which is a quarterly anthology devoted to fly fishing. But those were all 20 years ago. This, just by complete happenstance, happened to be found in the memorabilia room of Dave Boo Ferris, who pitched for the Red Sox back in the 1940s and 50s. And it was on a VHS cassette, and a family friend was going through it. And the VHS cassette, Tony, just said Ted and Bobby on the label. And when the man who was going through all this stuff, Hayes Collins, he saw Ted and Bobby, he's like, you know, I should probably pop this one into the VCR and see what it is. And lo and behold, the band found buried treasure.
Yeah, you know, in watching it, it occurred to me, just watching Ted Williams's body language and the way he talks and the, I'm going to use the word arrogance, but he has a right. I mean, because he's one of the, if not the, he's one of the greatest hitters of all time. Do you know who he reminds me of immediately? It's Bobby Knight. Do you get any of that sense?
Yeah, well, that's a great, you know, I hadn't thought of that comparison, but I think it's spot on. Ted Williams doesn't walk around. Ted Williams floats. He's got this energy to him that it's rare, where he can be, if you look at it in a vacuum, puttingly arrogant. Like, Ted walks around like he knows everything, and anyone who disagrees with him is just adult, and he's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can go through this for people that aren't as familiar with Ted Williams's career as I am or Jeff is. You can go through this. You can look at his numbers, which are all like top five, top 10 numbers in the history of baseball. And he missed 4.5 years to military service, where he was a combat pilot. Hello. You know, I mean, he would have been, had he played them all, in the same way that Willie Mays lost a couple of years. Had they played them all, you know, they're on top.
Yeah.
You know, they're on top. Ted Williams is that great hit. And now what I'm going to ask is complete speculation, and maybe you have thought of it. But Ted Williams, you know, he wrote about the art of hitting. He understood the art of hitting. What do you think Ted Williams would do now in the analytical baseball world with all of those statistics? Do you think he would embrace all that because he would say, this is exactly what I'm talking about? Or do you think he would reject most of it?
I think there would have been a little bit of both. Ted Williams was, if not the first, then one of baseball's first quants. He's somebody who understood the numbers. And we can see this in The Science of Hitting, his book. He has a color-coded chart in there that is essentially the first heat map in baseball. It shows where you should swing and what you're going to hit in different 77 unique parts of the zone. And so I think at first, Ted Williams would have loved the idea of sabermetrics and of having all of these numbers around and of doing things with the data. I also think he would have been absolutely obnoxious in pointing out how everyone else is using it wrong. And there's something to be said for that, Tony. Like, we talked a lot during the show. Joey Votto joins us, and he's just, you know, he was Ted Williams' greatest devotee. And, Joey was cerebral about the art of hitting, but I think he also understood that, for example, we see right now, you pull the ball in the air. Like, players are being taught that right and left. But as Joey points out, like, the hardest thing to do is to pull the ball in the air just because of the way that your bat is operating when you're swinging it. You just have less barrel face to hit the ball on when you do that. And so many players right now are lesser and worse hitters because they're going after this really difficult thing to do. Joey said there are too many players who have died at the altar of trying to pull the ball. So I think Ted would look at that like, this is a good idea that has run amok.
Yeah, I'm concurrent on that. Here's what I believe that Ted Williams would look at all the numbers and say, all of this makes sense, but can this guy do it? I've watched this guy. This guy can't do it. This leads me into the thing that drives me crazy with the Nats, where they go righty-lefty all the time, and they put up Tania, and he can't do it. It doesn't matter that he's a lefty against a righty. He can't do it. And Ted Williams could do everything. I mean, Ted Williams could do everything. So when you sat and watched it, you must have gone wild. I mean, you're a baseball guy. You must have loved it.
Oh, my God. It was in the middle of the trade deadline.
And oh, okay. So you're working.
And Josh sends me the video. And I'm like, hey, I gotta make some calls. I'll take a look at this later tonight. And he says, it's Ted effing Williams, Jeff.
Yeah. You gotta look at it. Is there anybody out there now who is like Ted Williams at all in terms of being a hitter? Is there anyone you see now? Nobody's as good. I understand that. But is there anybody out there who you think has some sort of cerebral approach that combines physical and cerebral? Anybody like that?
I think Votto was the foremost among modern players. But I think you look at Aaron Judge, and he certainly understands that in the same way that Ted Williams did with his size and with his physicality. If you have a particular sort of swing that has, as Ted Williams pointed out, a slight upswing to meet the plane of the pitch that's coming in, like you're going to find success if you do things that way. And that's what Aaron Judge has done. That's what countless others have done. They embrace, Tony, the ideas behind hitting theory. Ted's just the one who developed them. Without any of this technology, without any of these numbers, he did it through intuition. And that, to me, when we're talking about Ted Williams as savant, is the most impressive of all. The ideas that he came up with and the ideals that he pursued are what's being taught almost across the entire sport by coaches these days. And this is what Ted Williams was talking about, Tony, 80 years ago.
Yeah.
Just intuited it out of what he felt and what he saw. And that, to me, is how you know that Ted Williams's brain was different than everybody else's.
Yeah, and he has been reduced because of this nonsense with the cryogenics, cutting his head off and all of that. He's been reduced to a clown show, which is absurd. Yeah. The guys, how can people watch this? Tell people how they can watch this.
You can go to YouTube on ESPN's MLB channel, and I think it'll probably be on TV today as well on ESPN2. They usually are, but either way, online is the best place to do it, and it's, between Joey's commentary, we talked to Dave McCarthy, who was a security guard for Ted and runs the Ted Williams Foundation these days. It's a lot of good conversation about somebody who is, to me, the most fascinating character in baseball history. I know Babe Ruth. I know Jackie Robinson. There are plenty of others. But Ted Williams, just in terms of the persona and the pursuit of knowledge, to me, is the apex of what we can see in a baseball player.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. I hope people watch it. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate you having me, pal.
Jeff Passan, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with email and jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the United States. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball. Home or away, every pitch, every game, every day, T-Mobile. It's better over here. Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. according to Ookla Speed Test. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speed Test Intelligence Data 1H 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, the rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, all with the space, tech, and features to handle it all from the worksite to the trails. It also means driving for less with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power, and it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked number one and number two in resale value over all vehicles, according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average right back in your pocket when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicle's projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's, Tony's mailbag. He got your emails, faxes, and your notes. He's gonna read some mail for all you folks.
I like that a lot. That's Tom Goddard. That's I wish I could do that. I can't do that. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
And before we get to the mailbag, let me just say this is the way I always dreamed it would be. The way that it is when you are holding me. I never had a love of my own. Maybe that's why when we're all alone, I can hear music. I can hear music. A lot of people have done that song, Nobody Better Than the Beach Boys.
Oof.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Nobody Better Than the Beach Boys. There's a note here that the lead singer of Looking Glass has a birthday, but there's no way we're doing lyrics from Brandy. No, we're not.
Not
what a
happen.
Good wife she would be. No. But her looks could steal a self and see. No, shut up. Get out. Thanks to our guests today, Jeremy Schapp and Jeff Passan. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. Get show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. From Jeff Feiler, the Associate Director of Athletics and the Equipment Manager at Albright College in Pennsylvania. Listening to the opening of Tuesday's show, I heard you mention your friend Steve Pearsall's brother Tommy, who attended Albright College in Reading. I thought to myself, I know that name and that school. I have worked in the athletic department at Albright since 1998. I thought you would like to know that Tommy Pearsall is the all-time leading scorer in Albright basketball history, totaling 2,164 points. He averaged 20.2 points per game in his career, was inducted into the Albright Athletic Hall of Fame in 1991. I never had the pleasure of meeting him, so I don't know if this qualifies as my David Aldridge moment, but as of now, it's as close as I've gotten, so I will take it. He's a great player.
Great player.
He was a great, great player, Tommy Pearsall. Great. From Paul Berry. Not that Paul Berry.
I don't think it's that
San Antonio, Texas.
No.
Thank you for the kind words regarding Andy Poland. How's this for a small world moment? I've known Andy since we met at a radio station where he was working overnight news in San Antonio while he was in college. At one point in my time of knowing Andy in the late 70s, I ran the board while Andy and a few other guys hosted a 10-hour sports talk radio show every Saturday and Sunday. 10 hours.
Wow. 10 hours?
Long before there was a long-form radio shows that, that featured sports. Andy went on to much bigger jobs in Dallas, New York City, and in D.C., including a national sports radio gig at UPI Radio. I was sitting next to Andy at the Rose Bowl in 1983 when the Washington football team beat the Miami Dolphins in Super Bowl 17. That's the John Riggins touchdown run game. Andy also gave a reading at my wedding in 1988.
Oh, wow.
There are many great stories I can tell you about my friendship with Andy, but one that is most important, I began listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show because he was on the show with you. Thanks again for the nice tribute to Andy. That's nice.
That's lovely.
Oh, we have a Rick Devens update from Dan Kilday. Welcome back, Mr. Tony. I'm here with your Rick Devens update. The loyal little big brother made significant moves while you were out last week. Keep in mind, everything I'm about to tell you is compiled from things I've read online because I feel the same way about watching this stupid show as you do about going on vacation. Anyway, from what I understand, each week a contestant wins HOH, or head of household, along with getting a private suite with your own bathroom while everyone else lives in the communal life. You are also required to nominate 3 house guests for banishment. This past week, someone outside of Rick's alliance won HOH and nominated 2 of Rick's closest allies in the game. Unbeknownst to the HOH, however, Rick secretly held the diamond power of veto and used it to take one of those allies off the board and replaced her with the HOH's closest ally. Boom, baby. This happened on Monday night of this week, and now Rick has to live in the house with all of these new enemies until one of the 3 nominees gets voted off on Thursday. If you don't understand anything I just said, don't worry, neither do I. The important thing to understand here is that Rick is rocking and rolling.
Still doing great. We love it.
From Stephen McCarthy in Washington, D.C., I don't have a urinal story, but I do have a small world story. In the spring of 2017, I was studying abroad in Paris. I had gotten some good news that day, and so I went to my favorite hole-in-the-wall bar to celebrate. At the bar that night, I met a woman named Paris. A woman named Paris in Paris, a fellow American studying abroad. During the course of our conversation, we realized that I knew her cousin. Her cousin and I both worked together as counselors in a summer camp on a lake in rural New Hampshire. These things happen all the time.
Small world.
They do. This is from Rich Morikel. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Wilbon is so wrong about the PGA ignoring the Midwest. 4 tournaments are played in California. 7 are played in the South: Arizona, Texas, Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky. 5 in Florida. 6 in the 95 corridor. States 95 runs through, excluding Florida. And 5 in the Midwest. 6 if you count Toronto. Plus the President's Cup, the Memorial in Ohio, the John Deere in Illinois, the 3M in Minnesota, the Rocket Classic in Michigan, the BMW in Missouri. Looks pretty balanced to me. As they say, the tour follows the sun. Are you ready for some football? Yeah. From Steve Gilmore in Rising Star, Texas. Dear Potato Man, not sure what to do on vacation? Follow Wilbon's lead. Blindfolded origami with Richard Dent, playing cornhole with Messi, reprogramming MapQuest so that you can cross 3 states in 17 minutes, working on Pete Crow Armstrong's Hall of Fame induction speech, and last but not least, sending cease and desist letters to the state of Indiana concerning the Bears. From Brandon Borzelli, Lebanon, New Jersey. You don't know how to vacation? You can't relax? Have you tried taking a trip to Miami, having some lunch with some old-time associates, maybe hopping on a plane to Cuba to take in some nightlife, perhaps a little New Year's celebration? I hear you can even lie down to take a nap on those vacations, and sometimes when you wake up, there's a briefcase of money on the table. Then you'll know you have a partner.
Could be bigger than U.S. Steel.
This is a long one. From Wes Bean in Ohio. It's been 13 days since you read my email on the air. I thought you deserved an update on what fame has done to me. The attention has been exhausting. People are quieter around me now. Strangers continue to walk past me without saying anything, presumably out of respect. Restaurants have somehow resisted the temptation to comp my meals. I went to the grocery store. Not one person asked for a picture. I appreciated their restraint. My phone has also remained remarkably quiet. No agents, no podcast offers, no speaking requests, not even Nigel checking in to see how I'm handling the transition. It's almost as if nobody knows who I am, but I know. 13 days ago, I was simply a CFA charter holder in Ohio with a respectable career and apparently far too much time on my hands. Then Tony Kornheiser read my email and everything changed. I now enter rooms knowing that everyone in them could theoretically have heard it. That's a difficult level of celebrity to carry. I've tried to remain grounded, same house, same friends, still pump my own gas. Frankly, I think I've handled fame remarkably well. The people closest to me say I haven't changed at all. They usually say this while asking me to stop talking about the email. So thank you, Tony. You gave an ordinary man from Ohio his 15 seconds of fame. Unfortunately, you gave him a story he's apparently going to tell for the rest of his life. And, you know, and now he's got another one.
Right,
now he's got another.
Exactly.
From Alex Lau in New York City. I used the urinal at work today. I didn't stand next to anybody. I thought you should know. Alex Lau's always funny.
He is.
He's always funny. There's another one in here. No. D. Christopher, Sandy Springs, South Carolina, entirely too close to Clemson. With apologies to Christy Tillman's wedding of 7707. I submit my oldest masculine grandchild's birthday to 2222. That's it. That's the number. Please tell Judge Gibson to eat it. From Adrian in Sydney, Australia, not Canada.
Pinham.
On Monday's pod, Landon Fisher reported his odometer hitting 333.3, and Michael asked the excellent question, how fast are you going? A few years ago, I had my first chance to impress you, but was too slow getting the woman to whom I'm related by marriage to take a photo as I managed to hold my speed at 84 kilometers on a winding country road while the odometer read 84.8. Since then, I have chosen to ignore our strict no phones in hand while driving laws so that I may have fuel to mildly entertain yourself in the littles. To date, I've managed to document the following: 99,999 at 99 kilometers, 100,000 at 100 kilometers, 100,001 at 101 kilometers, 100,011,111 at 11 kilometers. I was in a car park with my 12-year-old, and 11,14,11,14 at 11,14 kilometers. All attached for those watching on News Channel 8. I will keep you updated as more milestones come across my dash. In the unlucky event that I get caught by one of our ever-growing fleet of mobile phone detection cameras, I hope you will consider contributing towards the fine. Surely it's a tax write-off for being content for the show. I hope it will be no more than a Rehoboth water bill or a winter's worth of propane that hasn't been pre-purchased. That's very nice. And he sends all the pictures, which is great. From David Collier.
Oh, yeah.
David Collier, Severna Park, Maryland. Great recent news about Charlie Steiner. Yeah, Charlie did a game.
Yes.
Charlie came back and did a whole game.
Fantastic.
And everybody's happy about that, including Charlie.
Yeah.
Great recent news about Charlie Steiner. You and he should celebrate over a poo-poo platter at Lower Tower. Make sure to bring the menu. David Collier, Severna Park, Maryland. So we used to go to the Aloha Tower before the advent of poo-poo platters.
Oh, it was before
that. This is
so
long ago. It's so long ago. It's 70 years ago. There was no poo-poo platter. That's 50 years ago.
That's a recent thing? Wow.
No, that's 50 years ago. One more. So my wife, PG, is playing in a canasta tournament at Wyclef Country Club in Wellington, Florida this past winter with 150 women. At the second table she sat at, there was talk about where you're from. One of the women said she was from Sheepshead Bay in Brooklyn, and PG said, so am I. The woman said she lived on East 29th Street. PG said, I lived on East 28th. The woman said, you must have lived on Phyllis Bay's block. PG said, I am Phyllis Bay.
DG.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Right?
That's
unbelievable. I am.
That's who
PG.
I am. Yeah.
But she was PB then.
She was PB, yes.
Wow. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Look, Mother, I want to go to work in 1 hour. We are the pros from Dover, and we figure to crack this kid's chest and get out to the golf course before it gets dark.
I'm so tired all the time. Taking a break be such a crime. Not every mountain needs a climb. Overworking by design. I'm so tired all the time. Say you've got to know.
Traveling to take a break. I just wanna love you from a distance. Cause if you are too close, you break my heart. I just wanna love you from a distance. Cause it's easier to love you from afar. I just wanna love you, 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 you. I just wanna love you, you, you. Distance. Too much pressure on proximity to make you happy. Too many options that you can't seem to make up your mind. Too many miles from here to comfortable decisions. Futures full of too many paths and not enough time. There is something to have lovers in different places.
Next to me.